about his views? Yeah. Yeah, I want to get someone cancelled for, like, I don't know, believing in restoring the Seleucid Empire or something. Something really, really salacious like that. Hello and welcome to Masters of Our Domain, the podcast which is no longer about the hit 90s sitcom Seinfeld. I'm Milo Edwards and I'm joined by my co-host Pete Jones.
Great to be here post-Seinfeld.
Post-Seinfeld. We do live in a post-Seinfeld world now.
So does Seinfeld.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's tough.
It does.
We're happy to be here.
Yeah. It's a difficult one, though.
We should have done the marriage ref. That's what we should have followed up with.
Oh, yeah. Was that was like a kind of game show?
Yeah, it was like a reality comedy game show-ish thing. And I saw it. Okay. I'm the one. I saw one episode of it.
You ref that, man.
Me and Tom Papa. We were the ones who watched the show.
Tom Papa, what a name.
Yeah.
And also, we are joined by special guest, Rajiv Karia.
I'm back.
He's back.
Yeah. Back in the same chair for a different show.
Returning champion.
Yeah, here we go. You know, I on my way here, I realized that my first appearance on Masters of Our Domain was the fourth ever episode of Seinfeld. Mm. This is the fourth episode of I'm Alan Partridge.
There you go. You're a number four kind of guy.
Fours, man.
What was the fourth episode of Seinfeld?
What was it called?
I don't know. You're looking at me as though I haven't had to watch far more episodes of Seinfeld.
You know, I can't really even remember. The only thing I do remember was that there's a great line in it where Elaine says, like, she's like, you want to go eat something? And then Seinfeld's like, sure, what do you want? She's like, I don't know. What do you want? Wait, no, that's not it at all.
Male Unbonding is the episode.
Male Unbonding.
June 14th, 1990.
That was ages ago. That's why I don't remember.
My father's 47th birthday, that would have been.
Hey.
And it's called Male Unbonding. It's the only Seinfeld episode that doesn't have a the in the title.
Oh.
Bit of trivia for you there. And it's Jerry finds that trying to end a friendship with Joel, a guy he's known and disliked for years, is harder than breaking up with a woman.
Yeah, that adds up.
That is, yeah, it is tricky ending a friendship.
Yeah.
It's happening, though. It's happening all the time.
I think precisely because, you know, ending a relationship, it's like, well, I only have one available slot here. So it has to be. Whereas with a friendship, it's like, you can have any number of diffuse friendships. You can just allocate this one less time. You don't ever have to make a direct.
I think at this age as well, I do always feel guilty when I meet somebody new and I can tell they're a bit like, maybe we're going to be really good friends. And I'm like, buddy, I really like you. There's just not much space. I was like, I tell you what, you got Instagram, let's like each other's shit. And you know what? If I bump into you, I'm going to be fucking psyched. But I cannot promise you planned time. Mm. Yeah, it's just...
It's not got the wiggle room in the roster.
I'm a man about town.
I'm going to have to cut out an uncle if I make any more friends.
I mean, fine. Just hanging out with their uncles.
Yeah, not a big fan of your uncles.
I mean, I love my uncles, but I just don't like they're not taking up
what
a lot
man
of my social
love
time.
His uncles?
Yeah. See, my uncles are huge on Instagram, so yeah, it's just right.
A lot of likes,
liking that shit.
A lot of likes back and forth.
I've got a huge extended family, and we just got an enormous WhatsApp, so I kind of catch up with those guys.
Okay.
It's like a sort of bi-weekly update. You know exactly when anybody's birthday is. It's nice. You have got promo. If you guys ever have anything to promote to my family, just let me know. I'll get it straight to you.
How many members? Right. What are we talking?
Probably about nearly 100.
Golly.
So it's actually quite a valuable email list, is what you're saying.
Oh, like, yeah.
You could be filling shows on this basis.
Yeah. Well, I think I've only sold a few tickets, but I probably boosted up any views of my my online show. Got lots of texts being like, we're watching your show. I was like, oh, good. Yeah.
Quite a powerful network.
Yeah.
I'd have to individually contact each of my uncles. And even then, to get them to watch, I don't even know how they, I don't even know if they would. To get them to watch your show, I don't know.
Send them mine.
I'll give them a call. International. Is that still international costs? It's still international rates?
I think they still exist.
Technically, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I feel like if you don't know how to avoid them in this day and age, you deserve
to be paying extra
call fee.
Yeah, it does feel like a bit of an idiot tax at this point. It's like you can still call the speaking clock, or at least you could until recently. But like, what would possess you?
I tell you what, the speaking clock sounds like a clock that does talk. It's not like it doesn't say the time. It's just like it's a clock.
Tell me your stories, clock.
It's a very chatty clock you can call up.
I remember that being a gag in Only Fools and Horses. Mm. I can't remember exactly what the context was, but it was like a jilted girlfriend or something had like left in the middle of the night while they were on holiday, and the phone was off the hook and a call was engaged, and they realized that she'd phoned the speaking clock in a foreign country. She figured out that was the most per minute charge that she could get. It's like the Spanish.
Considering that that probably came from an episode from like, I don't know, 1986 or something. Quite a to the minute joke. They weren't harking back to references for 40 years ago like we just did.
No. Although I guess, I mean, the speaking clock's probably been around for quite a long time.
What, calling up the speaking clock?
Yeah, I reckon you could probably do that in like the 50s.
I don't know, because in the 50s, it's going to be one of those rotaries. And I can't imagine anybody ever using a rotary phone to call up a speaking clock.
Well, the time's going to be later by the time you get through, that's for sure, when you're using one of those.
Also, it's actually not, it's not like a robot back then. It's just a fella. You're like, hello? Yes, that's right. It's 7:03. Now, hang up.
My watch is a little bit slow.
A guy. Imagine the outrage when they like, right, we've invented a robot that'll talk to you down the phone. So the guy's like, I've been doing this for 4 years. I mean, I've been doing this for 40 bloody years, champ.
It would be good if the speaking clock was just, it just rang the phone box outside Big Ben. And you just had to be like,
oh,
look, can you just...
Oh, man, that is excellent. That would be so good. All right, hang on. Yeah, it's about 2:15. See ya. Be lucky.
It was like one of your citizenly obligations. If you happen to be walking past that phone box when it rings.
I think I have such a... I just know the older I get, the more I'm going to be a man who lives in the past. And my way of defining it now is I love... Yeah. I just love analog shit. Like I absolutely love analog things. And the idea of picking up a phone box ring and being able to pick it up, that's some deep analog shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
I saw a guy yesterday walked past him. He walked into a phone booth and then checked for change. And I thought, that is the most optimistic man I've ever seen.
That's some sort of vagrant time traveler.
Yeah, it's just like, this will be where change is. Like,
it was back when.
I was astonished you could open the phone. I'm like, I thought it was just like closed over.
Yeah,
I don't
most
know,
of them are
like,
little,
still
like,
open it.
Like, if you're in a nice neighborhood, they're like little book depositories now.
Yeah.
And if you're in a bad neighborhood, they're just like a place where you do smack.
Which is ironic because the book is older than the phone. But it's outlasted the phone.
Yeah.
Books thought, you thought you fucking had us, didn't you? Oh, yeah. About 1930, but we're back.
They shut down the library. They're going to fill it with stone tablets.
Yeah. I love to read a stone tablet. Yeah. Of course, in Australia, you have phone boxes, but they're free.
Are they now?
Yeah, they advertise it. I've never tried it, but apparently the Australian phone boxes, they say on them, you can make a call to anywhere in Australia for free, like any regular number.
That's pretty good.
So it made me think that if you were just like a homeless guy, you could just spend all day just phoning up homeless guys in different Australian cities. Like for fun, just like, and how's it going?
That's quite fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is good.
What are the rates? They can start doing arbitrage, being like, do you hear how much people are making begging in Perth? We got to get over there.
Never mind that. Get yourself a telesales job.
Yeah.
It's great. I'm outside all day. It's lovely.
Yeah. It wouldn't be so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is that job, not being homeless.
Or prank calls.
Yeah.
The other direction is homeless guys just like, look, I'm homeless, but I fucking love a prank call.
Yeah, prank calling like business owners that you have some kind of beef with.
Or just like homeless humor about like, we call you guys housies. They have a whole thing teasing on anybody who's not homeless. Yeah, I like to think they do.
Yeah. The one guy who's like the hipster homeless guy sort of adopted it as a lifestyle. He's like, oh no, I could go back anytime. I just think this is a purer way of life.
Wait, isn't it one of your things about the guy you saw in the down and out in the stairwell in Russia?
Oh yeah.
He actually had an apartment.
Yeah, he had an apartment in the building, but he used to sit in the stairwell all day drinking. And I thought he was over. It turned out that he was drinking, so his wife wouldn't let him in the apartment when he was drunk.
Yeah.
And so he would just, rather than being like, well, maybe I should drink less and sleep in a bed, he was like, no, I'm committed to drinking and I'll do it in a stairwell. But it did have the kind of amusing, he was like part-time homeless.
Golly. Yeah. Aren't we all part-time homeless?
Yeah. Whenever you're at work. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about I'm Alan Partridge, season 1, episode 4, Basic Alan.
Basic Alan.
Alan.
It's almost a bottle episode that doesn't take place in a bottle.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's the bottle episode that isn't.
Yeah, the free range bottle episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just basically an episode about Alan being bored.
It's a pun on basic. Well, it's not. It's the Alan Partridge style pun on. It's not really a pun on Basic Instinct, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Is there anything in the plot of this that mirrors Basic Instinct?
I think that's the double. The second joke is, the first joke is the pun doesn't make sense. The second joke is it's not even related to what happens.
Right. So Never Say Alan Again has nothing to do with Never Say Never Again.
Yeah. Because we had Watership Alan, didn't we? That was a previous one.
Yeah. Although that was about farmers.
Oh, yeah.
Is that the one before this one?
Yeah. Which I guess Watership Down is kind of about the terrors and iniquities of farmers in a way. And their effect.
I guess Basic Instinct. Yeah. Basic Instinct is where he's getting blackmailed. Well, that's Fatal Attraction.
No, Basic Instinct is where they're investigating Sharon Stone for murder.
Oh, the beaver.
And she's just being really sexy to the police. So they're like, I don't know if a woman this sexy could kill someone.
Yeah.
That's it. Could a hot woman kill? That's kind of the thesis statement of the movie.
Yeah. And you've got crossover. You've got Wayne Knight in that scene.
Mm. You have. Yeah. Newman himself. Yeah. There's quite a bit of crossover in that scene. Yeah. So, but yeah, basically he's very bored. I guess the most basic instinct element of it is that one of the women on the front desk is flirting with him.
That is my favorite bit of her appearances.
Mm.
I think people most remember something she does in the sixth episode where she, not to be dipping too much into next week.
No spoilers.
But she she has an outburst, which is very memorable.
Yeah.
But I think her greatest moment is in this episode. It's this rising to call his bluff, immediately being like, "Go on then, shag me," and then he just crumbles.
Yeah, this episode does continue the constant question I have: has he ever had sex? He also has a son.
Yeah.
I don't believe he's ever had sex.
This is the first time he openly talks about sex, isn't it? Oh, no.
No. It's almost every episode.
Yeah. Oh,
this back and forth between him being the least sexual man and also somehow he has a 22-year-old son.
But I think it is the first time you do get the son, yeah. I think this is the first time you find...
Oh, no. He previously says, I've got kids. They don't want to speak to me. This is the first time you hear the name Fernando.
Yeah, a great name.
Yeah, it is. Do you think it's some sort of... I mean, so Fernando's supposed to be 22 in 97, so it would be that they named him after the ABBA song.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the other way around.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah. ABBA were like, fuck, Partridge got there first. I'm trying to remember exactly how the episode starts now. I feel as though the first thing we get is him going to the front desk and he's singing Kate Bush.
Well, you got the radio scene first.
Ah, the radio,
which
of course.
Is, It's 1,230 to 12, him doing funny ways and comedy character Camp David.
Yeah, comedy character Camp David. It's funny with the intro bits because I feel as though they sort of blend into one and you can't really remember which one pairs with which episode, apart from ones which explicitly have some kind of, like the farmer's one.
Yeah.
Well, we get one at the end of the episode, which is obviously one of the most famous ones, I think, the read the small print on your cone tract.
Yeah.
One of the all-time Partridge moments. This is him trying to come up with different ways you could say the time of day, which I guess in a way sort of does fit with the episode. It's all about passing time.
Yeah, it's all about having nothing on, which is weird because I don't think they ever establish as to why he's got nothing on. Other episodes, it's like, why is this different to any other episode? Because he finishes his job at 7 in the morning.
Yeah. Mm.
It's like, why is this different? It's just kind of, then the hotel's being redone. So, and they're like, oh, you're the only person staying here. So we thought we'd go ahead with it anyway. And it's like, but he doesn't this isn't the adventures of the man who lives in the hotel who always gets entertained by other guests. So I was like, okay, it's just like, it's not really explained. I guess maybe that ties into just how dull it is in that he's just got nothing on. And he can't even entertain himself, which is, I think, the real quintessential Partridge element to it. Like when he's trying to rest on the bed and listening to his own relaxation tape and can't even make it 3 seconds without fidgeting or grabbing a book or something.
And highly relatable, you know, when you get into that. See, I feel as though I'm incredibly restless.
Yeah, I'm useless.
I'm in the fortunate position of there's always work I could be doing. my default position is, oh, I'll just work.
Yeah. But
then that's probably not great either.
Never really at work, never really at rest.
Yeah. We're getting into the dark corners of the soul here.
Yeah.
This is the strangest episode so far.
Okay. Yeah.
This is on the rewatch, I was like, it is stranger than I'd remembered.
Mm. Yeah. Because I feel like there's a... I think with the sometimes you'll hear the debate between like American versus British sitcoms, and Americans it's 22 episodes, but like British it is all quantity over, it's all quality over quantity. Every episode, and I'm like, this feels like the middle of a 22 episode season, this one.
It does. Also you actually think about it, you're like, how did they get away with doing this? Not in a controversial way, just because it's really dry.
Yeah.
Like there is not a plot, there's not a resolution. No. It's a big risk, and it's full of great partridgeisms, and it's got loads of good moments in it. But you are like, yeah, it is. It's dry, especially compared to like the first three episodes, which are like active. You know, he's going places, he's meeting people. This is probably the most one where you've got Alan in a vacuum.
Yeah,
and you see kind of what he's like in his own company.
I mean, not to spoil it.
Yeah.
Are there future episodes that are similar in vibe to Alan just trying to, like, he's literally just like, I've got to fill the time.
Yeah.
He's staring out the window so often.
It would have to be, what's the next one? Because the sixth one of series one has definitely got a lot going on.
Yeah.
And I'd say every episode of series two has got a lot going on.
It's like, there's a long sequence of him walking alongside the motorway, which I love because I'm like, this is the most like me that he is. Like the number of times I've walked alongside a motorway.
Yeah,
I'm like,
a dual carriageway.
Yeah. I'm like, this is tough.
Oh yeah, no, five is a crazy one.
Oh yeah, five.
Where he meets his biggest fan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Having a meeting with television executives from Ireland.
Yeah, and episode six is a real classic as well. Like what this episode is setting up is the kind of like the fundamental loneliness of Alan.
Yeah.
Like he's sort of like, he has contempt for Michael the Geordie, but when he's not got Michael the Geordie to talk to, he's at a loss. He tries to, he offers a man from the petrol station to go for a pint with him.
Yeah. And then the guy goes, he goes, no, well, I didn't want to either. And then leaves. Well, it's an interesting shot as well. That you don't see inside the petrol station.
Yeah.
It's the outside shot, and you just have the audio conversation.
Yeah, it's not seeing inside the petrol station was really adding to the, what happened to the budget of this episode?
Yeah.
You're kind of just like in the hotel, you're going to go, okay, we're walking to the petrol station. Yeah. We're not seeing inside.
But I can't fathom how, apart from that, I can't fathom how they could have saved money on this episode, because everybody's in it, and it's not actually doing the core thing of a bottle episode, which is doing one location.
Yeah.
It's almost like a sort of Dan Harmon-esque comment on bottle episodes, but deliberately not doing any of the things that would save you money. It's like a bottle episode, but if the only thing you had to save money on was your writer, and you had to like do as few lines as possible. Yeah. Like every time one character talks to another character, that's going to cost us more money. So you need to minimize it.
Paid by the word.
Yeah. The Wuthering Heights bit is excellent. No, that's like a, I think that's an all time.
Which bit?
Partridge, when he's singing to.
Oh right. Yep.
Lady who works in the hotel.
Yeah, he's singing to himself, and then Susan joins in, and then she's very bad at singing, and he's like, oh, you wouldn't expect that, would you? Yeah. Like, to look at you, you'd think you'd sing like an angel, and you open your mouth, and it's just
he says you sound like a trapped boy.
Bottom of a well.
Yeah.
And then this is when we get her sort of like, well, this is what I thought this was the most interesting dynamic of the whole thing, is her like kind of propositioning him. And then him sort of not knowing what to do with it. And then she brings it up multiple times throughout the episode. And kind of, I was watching it and I was trying to be like, I'm not sure quite what the, I mean, obviously it's funny that he's intimidated by it, but I was trying to figure out if we're definitely supposed to read it as like she's on the wind up, or if there's something deeper going on where she's more like, she's like, well, maybe you will. Like maybe there's like a, because he does have this strange sort of like frisson at the same time.
Yeah, it's like she kind of resents him, obviously, because he's a bit of a pain, and every conversation they have with him, he has like he's so rude to her immediately, being like, you can't sing. He can't say anything nice without like completely barbing it. He says something about like that lovely smile you've got, you could have been up all night throwing up and I wouldn't have known.
Yeah.
Maybe that's how you keep your figure. And she's just kind of like a bit speechless. I like to think that she's got this sort of, she's like, maybe physically, she's like, she wouldn't kick him out of bed. but it's more just the fun of rendering him speechless. It's like almost nothing renders the man speechless unless you go, I'll shag you on that mattress in the car park if you like. And then he doesn't really know what to say. She's like, cool, a little bit of peace. And
I was gonna say, I feel like the fact that she hangs out with the other two employees who constantly are actually making fun of him to his face. Yeah. They're like, clearly she's on the same page as those two, which is like, we think Alan's an idiot, but I'm more professional. What about if I also have fun with the idea of we're making fun of Alan to his face by saying, what, you're not going to go all the way with me? It'd be like, and then get returned to the game, and then you can go like, and then I said that, and then they'd love that. That's my feeling on it, is that she knows that she's taking the piss.
Yeah.
Also, she's more his age as well, so like, it wouldn't be the maddest thing in the world for them to bang.
Yeah.
It's quite fun. Yeah, this is probably the episode where you get the most...
the cut scene from the episode.
Yeah, you had to get the DVD for that one. But this is probably the episode where, like, for the first time you're seeing all the staff openly joking about Alan rather than just, like, Sally Phillips turning around to laugh, which you should be keeping up. I think there's almost like a... they've got to this point now where they're, like, their patience is tested with him and he knows and they're hiding it less. When she sort of invites him to book on for Christmas and it's May, but there's just this transparency of being like, come on, mate, we both know you're going to be here at Christmas. So just book on to the bloody Christmas.
Restaurants do be doing that though. They're like, oh, would you like to book your Christmas stuff? And it's like, I don't know. I wouldn't.
I hate being asked to do things like months and months in advance. I'm just like, don't ask me. Ideally, I wouldn't plan anything in my life for more than like a week.
Yeah.
I say to my friends now, I'm like, don't text me being like, let's all have dinner in 7 weeks. I want you to text me and say, do you want to go for a beer in 15 minutes? Okay. You will get an immediate answer of yes or no. And you know what? Probably it'll be yes.
Like, that's how we did this podcast.
Because your schedule's wide open.
No, I'm just like, no, I will bin things off. I just like the impulse. And I hate, also, everyone acts like the further you plan something in the future, the more bulletproof it is. It's like, no, people will cancel on you. Like, so if you're going to cancel on me, I'd rather not have it in my diary for 7 weeks. I have to move things around.
This now feels like it's turning into one of those like diary of a CEO type things. Like,
you're
okay,
listening to the Rajiv Cost.
Yeah. I don't have a diary. Whoa, what? That's right, because people don't respect your diary. They only respect their own diary.
I don't have a diary. Instead, what I have is a small paper journal, which is organized by date, month, and year.
Yeah, those are good. I loved the guy who was like, I have 3 days for every day that you have because I divide my day up into three separate days.
Yeah, he's like 6 a.m. till noon. That's one day.
Yeah.
And then near the end, he's like, boom, you're toast. I'm going to kick your butt.
Yeah. He's like, I've got 21 days for every 7 days that you're living. It can stack that up over a month, a year. You're toast. It's over for you. And it's...
And what's he the CEO of?
I don't know if that guy was the CEO of anything. Oh, right. He was very ripped. He looked like he might be the CEO of steroids.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or at least their biggest customer.
Yeah. Big fan.
Yeah. Yeah, I love those guys. They're
I don't think that's what you should look like. If you successfully live a lifestyle like that, you shouldn't be ripped. It's like, because being ripped, especially as big as he was, like real thick neck. Like,
yeah.
I think if he was like quite scrawny and weird and had like a real like weird patchy beard, I'd be like, yeah, he's telling the truth, because that's what that's what that does to a motherfucker. But like him being ripped, I'm like, no, you'd need a fuck ton of sleep. Like that doesn't add up.
Yeah, that's very true. You can't be leading that kind of Margaret Thatcher lifestyle.
Yeah,
being jacked doesn't make sense. She'd be losing all.
It's
their
a relatively modern thing. This kind of like they all get jacked now because they all want to be jacked, and it's just like no. It used to be if you were like a. Whatever happened to the big fat CEO guys who were just like
the prison?
Yeah, just like back in they were like think about Howard Hughes, like he was a big dog, and then how he was later in his life. That's what some of these guys should be like. Real,
I feel like they
the
will
Rick
be.
Rubin type, you know?
Yeah,
I feel like that's the end result, right? At some point in time, they're going to stop working out.
Oh, what's his name? The Twitter guy's got that really long goatee. There's something up with that, right? That's fucking
weird. Yeah. He does look a bit like an anime character.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like a sort of... That beard looks like you could knock on it and it would ding. You know? Like, it doesn't look like it has any kind of, like, give.
Yeah, it's not a soft beard.
Yeah, it's very, very low polygon man, Jack Dorsey. Yeah.
He's a very strange guy. Where, I don't even know where he is now.
No, I don't know. Oh, he started Blue Sky. That's him.
Oh, that's going great.
Really?
Yeah.
We're all on Blue Sky.
We're all on Blue Sky. I was on Blue Sky
Bad
just
name.
Now.
Bad name. Instantly. Blue
Sky. I'm always skying.
Yeah.
I'm always.
Sky me. Sky me about that, will you? Sky me.
Pop something in the sky.
Yeah. You guys are going to be on the blue tonight. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Rajiv just blew me about something. Having a few blue skis with the boys. Yeah. Yeah, there we go. There's a riff.
You got the guy. I made sure to write this down. I forget the name of the lady who works in the hotel.
Susan.
Yeah. Susan, the word she's just done with him, she goes, Alan, why don't you go and talk to somebody else?
Yeah.
Perfect delivery. And he's just like, okay.
Yeah. Because he's beautiful. He's unembarrassable. And it feels as though that's kind of actually foreshadowing a line we get in episode 6, which I won't spoil, but.
Yeah,
it feels like he's reusing it on someone
It's
else.
Nice to feel them gradually change because they're so polite in episode 1. It's so civil. And oddly enough, the only one who's never actually rude to him out of the 4 members of staff at the hotel is James Lance's character.
Oh, yeah.
He's always like actually kind of inquisitive when he's like, oh, you like the Beatles? I love the Beatles, you know. And even today when he knows that Alan is, Sally Phillips wants James Lance to go outside and have a fumble on the mattress.
Mm.
She's like, oh, 15 minutes. Alan overhears and then goes, oh, can you bring me a sandwich? Just time, any point in the next 15 minutes. And he's just like, nah, yeah, fine.
Any point in the next 15 minutes. Yeah, I feel like, the young guy kind of has this, like, he's perfected joshing Alan in a sort of polite way where he'll just do it from a position of pretending to not understand. Or like, yeah, I'll show you that trick with the mirror. Like all that kind of stuff where he's like, he's sort of like pretending to be his mate. But in a way, it's high level bullying.
Then again, maybe he gets the best deal because he doesn't have the flirtation and he doesn't get as like kind of transparently disrespected as Alan does to Michael.
Mm.
Maybe he's got the best position out of all of the hotel staff.
Yeah.
I also love that they include Lynn. That they want.
Oh, that's such a lovely moment.
It's like they get it. You know, like they get like, you know who else would love to make fun of Alan? Lynn, get in here.
And you
like,
know what? All oppression is connected. That's their. Yeah.
There's a bit more of that sweetness in the next episode as well. Yeah, it's sort of like reminding everyone that it is just Alan who treats her like this. Everybody else quite warms to her and likes her.
Yeah. it's great.
Yeah, we get a fun scene where all the staff are playing charades and Alan comes over and Michael Geordi is acting out movies and no one's getting it. And Alan, out of annoyance, keeps immediately saying what the movie is.
Yeah.
And then Alan himself acts out. Wash my car.
Yeah. Oh, so that made me think, like, between that and the first episode, I can't think of a travel tavern or a travel lodge or anywhere around the country where they would have a member of staff who would wash your car.
1997?
Yeah. Do you think that's what it was like?
I don't know. I can't imagine.
Oh, I wonder if it's maybe just how it was back then when, like, if you had someone staying at your hotel for weeks and weeks and weeks, the management goes, okay, we've got a guy who can do it and it'll keep him happy.
Yeah.
And then he'll probably stay for, you know, another month and we get more money. But it is kind of bizarre. It's a bizarre detail that it's not only Michael's obligation to clean his car, it's enough that Alan's allowed to like be a bit shitty to him if he's like having fun and not washing the car.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's also because it's the first episode also includes the car is being graffitied.
Yeah, cockpit partridge.
Yeah, cockpit partridge, which...
What does he change it to?
Cook Pass Babtridge.
Cook Pass Babtridge.
Yeah, so essentially then the sort of day of boredom ensues. Alan goes out, he buys himself a pack of tungsten's tip screws that he says he's never going to use.
Yeah.
We get some scenes of him driving around in the car.
Does he call up Curry's?
Yeah.
Calls up.
Yes.
Yes.
He calls up Curry's. Yeah.
And he says, apropos. And then he says, well, if you're working in Curry's, you should have some sort of basic grasp on Latin.
Yeah, perfect. Another one of those phrases that has permanently changed the way that I speak forever. Have you got any British references for this episode?
Well, actually, very few, I'll be honest, because we got Michael Palin's Pole to Pole, so that was fine.
Okay.
But the two big ones...
I don't really know what that is. I mean, I'm familiar with the concept.
Was that his breakthrough? Because I think that's what maybe broke
him
through as a
travel... He's always done kind of travel-y...
He did so many.
I think that might have been one of his first ones.
Yeah, Pole to Pole might have
been. It was like, oh, no, he's going to be a travel guy.
Because he also did Around the World in 80 Days, I think, as well.
Yeah.
I mean, he did
the ultimate career move. Get all your comedy dreams done and then just get paid to go on holiday. And it's only been matched by Richard Iwade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. I mean, once you get to that, it's just like, this is the best. This is the best pivot.
Yeah.
Because you can either go crank or You can go.
Who's post Monty Python career would you want the most?
Palin's.
I don't know. I'd want Gilliam's.
I just
watched 12 Monkeys the other day. It is wicked.
Yeah. Having read any,
I don't know much about Terry Gilliam really. In his,
he's just done a string of incredibly odd movies, and they're like Brazil's really highly acclaimed. Monkeys.
Having read an interview with Sarah Polley, who worked with him as a child on I wouldn't want Gilliam's.
Oh, gee.
Apparently, he's a bit of a.
Oh no, he definitely is, because he said that really shitty thing about I don't get work with the BBC because I'm not a black lesbian or something like that. It was just like, oh, such wit. Oh, what a brilliant witticism from this man. It's like, shut the fuck up.
I mean Palin's. Still Palin's. I'd say still Palin's.
Yeah, despite what we've just heard, still Palin. Yeah, I mean, John Cleese has gone in a bit of an unfortunate direction as well.
Yeah. Getting roasted on Australian television.
Eric Idle's kind of got his feet up.
Yeah, that is tough. Yeah, Eric Idle seems to be fine. He doesn't seem to be really doing anything either, but...
Apart from the theme, he did the theme to One Foot in the Grave. And that was, I want to say, 34 years ago, so...
Yeah, that's the other move is to go, do not, like, disappear and then reappear to applause. Whenever you pop back up, it's like,
and
oh,
the
there
bassist
is.
From Queen, who was just like, all right, this was great, guys, I'll see you. And just ducked out.
Just, I'm gone.
Yeah.
If you need me again.
And they had their own Freddie Mercury. Graham, what's his name? The one who died. The Monty Python guy who died.
Oh. My Monty Python knowledge really isn't that good. Really? I've seen some of it.
So the guy who played Brian, he died in the late 80s.
Okay.
He's the only one to have died.
Yeah, beyond the real headliners, I couldn't really name them all.
Really?
Fascinating.
Eric Idle, Michael Palin, John Cleese, Terry Gilliam.
Terry Jones.
Terry Jones, that's the one we were forgetting. And then I can't even remember the guy who died. Sorry.
Golly.
Yeah.
We're really getting into Partridge now. This is sort of, in a meta way, this is a discussion of Partridge because it's the kind of discussion Partridge would have.
What connects Partridge and Monty Python, though?
I mean, the network it's broadcast on?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. You know what? I work at the BBC, and they do have a load of Fawlty Towers stuff and Partridge stuff up all over the walls.
Yeah. There's a sort of, I guess there's a kind of, there's a level of Brit vibes analysis going on in a way. But in Monty Python, that's much more abstruse. But it's still kind of there. Like the Monty Python, like Woody and Tinny Word sketch feels as though it's like...
Yeah,
it's saying something about this country, but whereas Alan Partridge is doing that much more directly. Like, this is a type of guy. You've met this guy.
Yeah, Partridge is a type of guy, whereas I don't think you could say anything in Python is type of guy.
No.
They were deliberately fighting that kind of thing. There's sort of a naturalism in Partridge, which they never wanted to do. But there's not even any, like, people I can think of who were involved in Python who were then involved in Partridge. I guess maybe it's just a case of, like, a lot of these Python guys were big influences on... people that then went on to build this. Probably Iannucci is the connection.
Incidentally, this episode released on released on the 14th of why can I not speak today? This episode released on November 24th, 1997, and
what's top in the charts?
Well, yeah, people who've been listening to this miniseries will not be surprised to learn the number one song in the US is still "Candle in the Wind."
Yep.
Oh, of course. By
the 97 version.
What's been baffling is the whole time that we've been doing this, the US top chart song has been "Candle in the Wind," but the one in Britain has been "Barbie Girl" by Aqua. Well, we'd moved on.
we were over it. Yeah. There's a new people's princess, and she's in Aqua.
Yeah, I like that. People were not happy with the Queen mourning incorrectly, and yet, as a nation, you had already moved on.
No, because we had, like, outsourced all of our mourning to the Queen.
Yeah.
Listen, if we're going to be happy, you better be sad.
But the number one song...
So Tap in the Wheel knocked off Celine Dion?
Celine Dion will be in the future.
Wait, is Titanic not 97?
It is, but it comes out later.
Ah, really? Later than November? There's not much 97 left.
There's not a lot of 97 left.
97, you've got... I did a lot of research on this because I just did a thing over the weekend, Ivo Graham's Comedians DJ Battles.
Okay.
And the category that my team had was years ending in six. So we could only do songs from years ending in six. So I got a load of... Okay. We did great bangers from 96.
What are you doing? That's America by Razorlight? Or what are we
doing? That's 06, yeah, but yeah. We went higher than that. We actually went for 06, went for Welcome to the Black Parade, and we also did When You Were Young, The Killers.
Right.
On my long list, I also had No Tomorrow by Orson, 2006.
Okay. Yeah, nice.
Wolf Like Me, TV on the Radio, but that's never going to please the masses.
Yeah.
96,
is it? Pulp? Yeah.
No good Pulp, unfortunately. It was all because it was first release. And
Spice Girls?
You had Wannabe, but I didn't. I Wannabe wasn't quite what I wanted.
Okay.
96. You've got Firestarter.
Okay.
You've got Born Slippy. So two huge club bangers, but we didn't actually go for either of them. 96. When I was looking through the Billboard Top 100 from 96, like your whole like mid 90s hip hop was sovereign. Like the entire Billboard charts. As opposed to when I looked at 86 and 76, which was like 76, a mix of like rock and pop and disco and Motown and stuff. 86, again, a mix of like loads of things. The Billboard Top 100, 96, was like almost 90% your Faith Hill, your P. Diddy, your like everything was, I was like, it was king.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Glad we could get onto that topic.
But yeah, the number one song in the UK is Perfect Day by Heather Small and various artists.
Yeah, of course.
Children in Need.
They did the... Yeah, it's such a weird song, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because Perfect Day by Lou Reed is a very lovely song.
Yeah.
And they were like, what we're going to do is we're going to have everybody sing a line of Perfect Day. Mm. And it was for a comic... It wasn't. I think it was like a Children in Need advert, wasn't it? And then the advert did well, so they released it as a single.
I'm not sure. I mean, your memory of this seems to be better than mine. Oh wow! What a list of.
I want to see which.
Bono, yeah. Morcheeba.
Morcheeba.
Sure that is.
Rome wasn't built in a day by Morcheeba.
I wanted to see who these people you knew, but it turns out we've been stumped before you have.
Good knowledge from Pete. David Bowie. David Bowie. Suzanne Vega.
Suzanne Vega
I know that.
Yeah, she was.
It's like a one-hit wonder.
Tom's Diner.
Yeah. Elton John, Boyzone, Leslie Garrett, Burning Spear.
Leslie Garrett's done well.
Burning Spear. Yeah.
Burning Spear is a very like chieftain type name.
Yeah.
Doesn't really feel like a pop artist.
The UK's only Native American group.
Right. Yeah. Thomas Allen, Heather Small, Emmy Lou Harris, Tammy Wynette, and Shane McGowan.
Very Tammy country. Emmy Lou Harris and Tammy Wynette. In a British single.
Stand by Your Bear.
It's just, do you think they like, well, like, Lou, you got any favors you can call? And he was like, yeah, they're all Americans, huh? Like, and
yeah.
Then again, I can't imagine Lou Reed being friends with Tammy Wynette.
No. Although unlikely friendships do happen in the music industry.
Yeah, right? And he was famous for like a really long time. So he was probably friends with loads of people.
Yeah. It's also, what's funnier is that the Children in Need single was a song about heroin. That's funny.
Yeah.
that's what we've kind of been dancing around here.
It's a bit like the classic re-release that doesn't understand the original meaning of the song. Like, Many of Horror by Biffy Clyro became like this X Factor song. And everyone was like, when we collide, what a beautiful song about love. And it's like, isn't it about domestic abuse?
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh, yeah, we're just going to ignore that bit. Or like the million bastardizations of Born in the USA, every like Republican senator coming out to Born in the USA. Yeah. You know, don't listen to the verses.
Yeah. Let's just stick to the choruses.
Yeah.
Who has time for the verses?
Nobody.
I'll tell you what has been on repeat for me all week since our last episode.
Yeah.
Melting Pot.
Oh, really?
I've been cranking it on Spotify. Tell you what, it's a good track. I'm not singing along, but boy, it's a bit of fun.
Yeah, you've got to be careful about singing
take
along.
Take a pinch of white, man.
I tell you what, the radio edit for that song, a lot of gaps.
Yeah.
Seven
seconds long.
Yeah. What's crazy is, at least in the UK, the radio edit must have always had a lot of gaps, because it's like the... Actually, all of our really conservative rules about what you can have on radio are really old.
Yeah.
So even when the song came out, it must have been almost unplayable.
Yeah.
Even though it would have been less offensive to the mores.
We're a country that loves entendre.
Yeah.
Like, just don't take...
Double or otherwise.
Yeah, double, single, but like just get it in there. And it's just like, yeah, you can say stuff in a certain way, but don't you say it explicitly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
So it could be about heroin. It could be about a lovely walk.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they could have done that as the Children in Need charity single.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Mm.
Yeah, it was actually a child saying that racial slur, which sort of negates the...
Cute, isn't it? It's cute when it comes from a child's mouth.
They don't understand what they're saying. And that's their defense.
It's a different child for every line. So, you know.
Yeah. It's like when criminal gangs use their children as like smugglers or thieves or whatever, because they know they can't.
Because it's cuter, and the police are going to be like, "Oh, go on, go on, you scamp.
Where'd you get a kilo of heroin from then?"
This is the episode
probably
with
Lou Reed, I imagine, and being on that charity single.
Bloody Reed. This is the episode with the dismantling of the Corby Trouser Press. Another classic Partridgeism, I think.
Yeah, a real, because I think the genius of Partridge is like the level of bizarre they're prepared to go to, but also feels exactly like something he would do. I don't know like how many hours it takes in the writing room to come up with him dismantling his Corby Trouser Press.
This was one of the references I wrote down. What is a Corby Trouser Press?
Ooh, I only know about it through comedy. Right. Bill Bailey had a bit about it. And I think Alex Haddo, who's from Corby, I feel like she's talked on stage about Corby being famous from the Corby Trouser Press.
Yeah. Which interestingly is not true.
Is it not?
It's not. It wasn't invented in Corby. It was invented by a man called Corby.
A Mr. Corby.
Because I also thought this.
Oh.
Yeah, that it was presumably, because Corby's a manufacturing town. That would seem to make sense. That it would, but no, it's a man. It was like someone called like Matthew Corby or something.
Who on the map for the wrong reasons.
I wish it was Matthew's Trouser Press.
Yeah, that would have been good, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that'd be nicer.
Corby Trouser Press.
But it's literally just a non-electric thing that they used to, that they actually still have some in hotels where it's just
it's two hot plates that you like hang trousers between.
Oh, it is electric.
Yeah, it is electric. Yeah, and you can hang your jacket on the that has like a hanger type attachment on the top, and I think it kind of like lightly steams inside of your jacket just from the heat of the press on the trousers. My dad actually owned one.
You still have it?
That was very. I don't think we've got it. No, I think they did throw it out. But
that's the kind of analog shit your boy Rajiv would absolutely take off your hands.
Oh, my dad was such an 80s business guy. Like, just in the sense of he's like, well, trouser press, of course, it makes your life. Yeah, I've got multiple suits. I don't have time to iron them all. It makes your life.
Was he a briefcase man?
Yeah, at some point, definitely.
Yeah, my dad. Yeah. I just thought all dads had briefcases.
Yeah.
And then, but now he's a backpack dad.
Yeah, great.
RAF veteran Peter Corby, inventor of the press, died in August 2021 at the age of 97.
No.
Trapped in his own Corby press.
So he lived to watch this episode, yelling at the television, going, it's perfectly simple.
You can put it back together.
Yeah, exactly. I designed it. I'm a military man. I designed it.
Calling them up. Being like, I'll fix it for you. No, I'm not from Corby. Why do people always ask that?
No. The town was named after me.
I'm not Peter of Corby.
Peter Corby's trouser press.
Yeah, going back to medieval style naming qualification conventions. But yeah, I wonder if...
It's real. It's real businessman on the road.
I'm Alan Partridge is mentioned on the Corby Trouser Press Wikipedia page, which is good stuff.
Does he have anything else particularly? He has a couple of when he's in the room on his own, he's like doing show ideas, but nothing's quite as funny or memorable as what you get in the first episode that he pitches. And it's good because the show proves that he saved his very best ideas to pitch to the David Hayes.
Yeah, Tony Hayes.
Tony Hayes.
Yeah. But it's played by David Schneider.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, we get a little fun scene where Lynn
cameo from him,
Lynn comes and plays cards with the hotel staff, and then Alan gets mad and he sort of swings a handbag around and knocks some stuff over.
Who can remember what he says when he swings his satchel onto the table?
It's gone.
It's watch it.
Yeah.
Because I thought in my head I was like, he's about to say this country. It's like, no, he says that at a different point.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. And so then Lynn comes up and he plays us some dictaphone messages of him threatening to sack her, and he's like, it's good job you weren't up here 5 minutes ago.
And then it descends into him just pitching more ideas, and he's like, you don't hear that.
Yeah.
And then what does she say? She goes, we're just doing impressions of everybody, you don't need to get her feelings, you know, we didn't have me. And then she says, and he's like, what did that go like? She's like, Lynn, why don't you just drop everything at the drop of a hat, because Alan says you've got to come to the travel tavern. No, you can't get your mother out of the bath because Alan needs help at the travel tavern. It's quite good, actually.
Accurate. Yeah. So he says that he'll go down and join in, and to show that he's good fun, he'll do a little joke for them. And then he appears downstairs dressed as a zombie, like wearing a bath mat and a shower curtain.
He's got the wire from the kettle as a tail.
Yeah.
He's painted his face white. He's got biscuits on his face to
the flaky skin.
Flaky skin, yeah.
And complete with the tungsten tip screws on the end of his fingers.
Yeah, it's quite an elaborate costume, but similarly doesn't really evoke the concept of the zombie.
Yeah, and then that's what... Well, first of all, he really scares everyone. And is it Michael jumps into action?
Yeah, Michael sort of goes for him. Yeah. He's like, it's me, I'm Alan Partridge.
Yeah. And they were like, what are you doing? And then they have a series of questions about the reasoning behind him but dressing up, the fact that he's getting zombies mixed up and it's a mishmash. And
Yeah, there's a bit where he says, you're like Frankenstein.
He goes, you made two mistakes here.
Number one, that's the name of the creator. Number two, Frankenstein technically is a type of zombie. It's like when people say Tannoy when they mean public address system. Tannoy is a brand name.
Yeah, Tannoy also. What the fuck?
Yeah.
What the fuck's Tannoy?
Oh, you've not heard Tannoy. What would you call it? You'd call it a PA system.
Yeah. This is a British-only thing, calling it a Tannoy.
It's fallen out of vogue. I feel like when we were younger, people were like, on the Tannoy, and now people say on the PA.
So it's like if you use on a speaker, any speaker anyway.
Just on a speaker.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a Tannoy.
But it's specifically that kind of like, can you come to customer services, please? Yeah, like that kind of.
That's a Tannoy. On the Tannoy. Okay.
Tannoy.
Hoover.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, that never made it. I don't know whether the brand Tannoy was only ever a British thing, so that's why.
That's such a strange one to go with the brand. Like, Hoover makes so much sense. Band-Aid makes sense to be like, this is the brand because it's the thing. But to be like, to hear a speaker and be like, oh, you know, the Tannoy. Like, which part of it's the brand?
You'd never be exposed to the brand, would you?
I think they had a big brand push. I think they were the first ones being like, you can use this in your supermarket. You don't have to...
Yeah, you can say when someone shit themselves in the produce section. Covertly, you can say something euphemistic, like a code shit.
Yeah. Is there a fire? You can say, fire. And then after a couple of years, they twig and say, okay, can Mr. Fire please come to the freezer section? Mr. Electrical Fire?
Mr. Full Evacuation in 10 minutes.
What is in America they say Kleenex. Kleenex instead of just not just tissue.
But again, Kleenex makes sense because it's a brand of tissue. That's why I'm like, because you're looking at it, you'd be like, I'm going to buy some Kleenex.
But what's weird is we had tissues before you had the company Kleenex.
What I find interesting about this is that between, I would say, British and American English, there are both things that we use brands to refer to and things we don't use the brand to refer to. But in British and American English, they're completely different. And there's no, like, for example, like, our tissues are also Kleenex, but we call them tissues and they call them a Kleenex. But similarly, their Hoovers are also made by Hoover, which is an American company, but they would never call it a Hoover. And like these kind of, what was going on in our various minds that we decided the brand for that thing and not for another?
Why are you going to Hoover the living room rather than vacuum it?
Yeah. Or just sucking it off.
For years, you'd call it sucking off the living room.
It was a good way. Let me just do that.
And that was named after Albert Suckinoff, who invented one of the first living room brooms.
Yeah, that's very good. Well, in Russian, they call it a vacuum cleaner a pulisos, a dust suck.
Dust suck.
It's sort of pleasingly literal.
Yeah.
It's just like, there's so many things where you're just like, I always think the word upside down is just like, wow, we never got anything better than that. Just upside down. You're like, okay, yep. Let's just go. Let's not try any harder on that. Just get it. Just do that one.
Well, it was because of lobbying from Diana Ross. She was like, that song's going to sound bloody ridiculous. I'm not 100% that was Diana Ross. That was my first guess.
I think you might be on the right track. It sounds like that.
On the right track. I don't know if there is a right track per se. Like, it'd be on the wrong track if it was like by Enya.
Yeah, but you can just say that whoever it is, it's just like, well, I just call it Diana Ross.
Yeah.
It is Diana Ross.
Yeah, well deduced.
Kind of sounds like Diana Ross.
Yeah, it does. But then again, it could have been one of those false flags, like that song that everybody thinks is by Alanis Morissette.
Which one?
Bitch.
By Meredith Brooks.
Yeah.
There we go. So you're great on the music round today. Not that there are any points to be had, but if there were points...
Tune in for the music spin-off round. It's just all the songs from Alan Partridge.
Well, we had a very famous parody song of Bitch.
Of course.
Bloke by Chris Franklin, who's a comedian in Australia.
Oh, yeah.
He still plays it. It was a big hit at the end of the 90s, and he'll still close shows doing it.
I've seen him do it live.
I feel like musical comedy, from what I've read, musical comedy was really able to thrive and make you a star in Australia. I feel like all of the novelty musicians who were doing musical comedy in the 80s and 90s in this country didn't reach the heights of the ones in Australia.
Well, you could definitely get to number one, and you probably get, you would get to number, or you'd have a hit single.
I don't think we ever had that. I don't think there was ever a musical.
You don't think there was ever a parody song?
We don't really make parody songs in this country. We consume them, we love them, but look at Weird Al.
Yeah,
like Weird Al was American. We had a big, there was a big moment in the 2000s when now famous doctor comedian Adam Kay was originally in a musical comedy group called Amateur Transplants. And they had a song that genuinely your friends would send to you.
Yeah, it was Bluetooth.
Your friends were Bluetooth. It should be called the Bluetooth song because everybody consumed that song through their mate's phone in 2005. Mm. It was a parody of, it was to the tune of Going Underground by The Jam.
The Jam, yeah. Right.
And it was just called the London Underground song. And it was just about how he fucking hated the Underground and the driver's always on strike and it smells of piss. And
the fuck them all, I'm going to shoot them all with a rifle.
Yeah.
La 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 la. Yeah.
It wouldn't even have to be parody songs that made it big. We would love, a lot of novelty songs would also get kind of like to number one or chart really highly.
Okay, yeah. Because you had Kevin Bloody Smith. Kevin Bloody Wilson, that was it. Yeah, not Kevin Bloody Smith.
Kevin Bloody
Smith.
That's
just what you call Kevin Smith.
Bloody Bob, strike back. That's the Australian version.
Kevin Bloody Smith. Kevin Bloody Smith's fucking Clerks.
I remember there was a guy at my sixth form college who was obsessed with
Kevin Bloody Wilson.
Kevin Bloody Wilson, yeah.
Kevin Bloody Wilson and Rodney Rood, they're the two big ones.
Yeah, he's looking for one.
Yeah, we just never had that.
Musical
comedy, I mean, even there were musical, but they didn't ascend the way it sounds like. These Australian ones, it's like 20 years later, they're doing a reunion tour and it's massive. And you're like, oh my God.
Like the Wiggles.
Yeah.
If they'd have done the London Underground song, could have been a very different story. Would have had more of a Wheels on the Bus type vibe.
A bit more respectful, I think. These people work very hard.
Yeah.
They did. Here's my big question, because one of my favorite things in Australian music history is that the number one song in Australia when September 11 happens is Bob the Builder's Can We Fix It?
Now, yeah, great.
No, they can't. But did that go number one here?
I think it came pretty close. It was really, it was.
Oh, I'm pretty sure it did.
It was so big that it led to a follow-up, which did pretty well as well. Yeah, the Mamba number five.
Yeah, same. Did well with us too.
Is it a little bit of timber and a saw? Yeah. Oh, it is banging.
Yeah.
Probably bought, what's his name? Toni Morrissey, a house.
I feel like that's the crossover between, like, the States would never. The Bob the Builder's not going number one in the States.
You know what it is? It's because you come from a nation of craftsmen.
peak chart position.
Finally, a song for us.
peak chart position for Bob the Builder. Australia, 1. Europe, 6. Ireland, 3. Scotland, 1. UK singles, 1. UK indie, 1. how is that technically indie? Yeah, Bob the Builder's got his skinny jeans on. Yeah. It's weird how the third track on the CD is actually called Dalston Can Wait.
What?
Yeah, no.
See, because this is the crossover between the UK charts and the Australian charts is a novelty Europop sort of song like this. Yeah. We'll go high in both. But if you guys aren't taking the comedy parody songs, we can take like footballers hosting like a footy show, do a parody of something. We'll chart.
Yeah.
And that'll just get in the chart light. That'll go big. But
it's a real disrespect to the serious musicians of your country.
Yeah.
We also support them. Let's not paint the idea that exclusively the number one songs.
No, but imagine top 40, like,
it's all parody.
Yeah, it's just like, no, imagine being like, oh, here we go. We're going to get the number one. We've worked on this for years. Like, oh, we've been knocked off by a guy who pretends to be a race that he's not.
Yeah.
But it's a different one every week, and that's what's so impressive.
Yeah, it's always a different parody song.
Yeah. Amazingly, they're on the UK and Australian CD single, there are four tracks.
Four tracks, what have we got?
Yeah, got Can We Fix It? We've got Bob's Line Dance.
Can We Fix It? Armin van Helden remix.
Well, close. I mean, we've got Can We Fix It? Karaoke version.
Of course.
Oh.
And Can We Fix It? Video, which I feel that on a CD.
On a CD?
Yeah, they would have you, because obviously about this point, I remember my brief buying singles era would be you probably play it on the computer. And so you could, the video was there.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Windows Media Player, fire it up. Let's see what Bob's got to say for himself.
Yeah.
He's there. Big,
not
big
bad, considering that would have cost you £4. They're giving you your money's worth.
Yeah, they certainly have. And the people of Britain and Australia agreed.
Yeah.
So I think, people of Ireland less sold. They were like, well, we enjoy Bob the Builder, but at the end of the day, he is still a collaborator.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, we would prefer a homegrown building enthusiast.
Did Chris Franklin's bloke chart in the UK?
What
year did it come out?
I think it's 99.
Because I've never, ever heard of it. Which makes me think that maybe it has, maybe it didn't.
Okay, bloke, Chris Franklin song, Wikipedia. Bloke is song formed by Australian comedian Chris Franklin. This is the parody of Meredith Brooks' song, Bitch. With his change.
His big gag that he still does, where
at
it's like...
2000.
Because he played it once at the MCG at a big football game, so 100,000 people. He got to play it. He goes, and then we'll always be like, and now here at whatever pub he's currently in where he's about to play it. He goes, got to play at two great places, the MCG in front of 100,000 people and here for you 20 people. Big gag every time.
Still
does it.
Wonderful.
That's a great gag.
So released in the year 2000. In that year, it received award nominations for Highest Selling Single and Best Comedy Release. Amazing that it was nominated for Highest Selling Single, as though that isn't just a simply an empirical... Like, anyone who releases a single is, in a way, nominated.
They've got a sort of proportional represent... No, first past the post kind of thing. So once you get past a certain level, it's a vote system.
Yeah. That makes sense. And the Australian CD single, I don't believe it was released anywhere else. Because back in those days, things were ring-fenced, you know. Yeah. The single included two tracks. Number one, Bloke, of course.
Yep.
And the second track, Jack Off Australia. Which is ambitious. I'll say that. That would be a fun day. I'm going to jack off every bloke in this country.
I mean, obviously, Bloke was a bigger hit than Bitch. It was a much bigger hit.
Really? Yeah. Well, yeah.
Because it was number one for so long. And Bitch, I don't think even charted the number one in Australia.
Do you think there's ever a point in a bar in Australia where Bitch comes on and people are like,
oh, this is a parody.
I prefer the original, if I'm honest. I think this is, I don't see why it's so funny.
Yeah. Weird that she's trying to, make it about women.
It's like if you put on Valerie by the Zootons, people are like, I don't like this cover.
Yeah.
Heathens.
Yeah, that is horrible when that happens.
This is a Zootons true podcast.
Yeah. I don't know if the Zootons have done much else, but...
They released a string of very good albums before breaking up, and they've reunited, and they've just been added to the Glastonbury lineup.
Oh.
If anybody else wants more Zootons information, you can contact me directly on social media.
Don't Google the Zootons. Nothing comes up.
No, it's best to
just email Rajiv.
I've had it all taken down. I've put a fence around Zootons' knowledge.
Yeah, and if you want any more Chris Franklin knowledge, just add him on Facebook.
You can't. He's got too many friends. I've tried. He did. Well, the thing about Chris Franklin is he famously wears flip-flops everywhere.
Yeah.
And on one occasion, I was with some British guys. They were adamant they were going to try and buy him a drink in this pub, and I was kind of like, I don't see any need to do that. And they were doing it, and they sort of beckoned him over. And they were like, oh, do you want to sit down and have a drink with us? We'll get you a drink. And he was like, no, you're all right. And then they were like, oh, why not? And he was like, I just prefer drinking on my own. And I was like, it's a particularly brutal turndown, like not for any reason other than I would rather be on my own than with you. And then following that, you're like, that is also a man who's worn flip-flops every day of his life for God knows how long.
Yeah.
And he's still like, not sure about this.
It's a sort of a Slurms McKenzie moment, being like, no, fellas, the party's over.
Yeah. Yeah. So the sort of denouement of the episode is that Alan and Michael the Geordie decide to go and steal a traffic cone and get Lynn to drive them because they're drunk. And then they are immediately arrested, except that Michael the Geordie absconds over the hill. And so it's just Alan drunkenly talking to the police.
It does smack a bottle episode as well, how they have the idea for it. They're getting ramped up for it. Cut to straight away. It's over.
Yeah.
And it's such a funny contrast of simply just being like, the joy of them. We're like, we're going to do it. No, we can do it. We could, like, it's a contrast to the rest of the episode where Alan's like trapped in his own boredom because he can't think of anything to do.
Yeah.
And then suddenly Michael's given him this freedom of being like, you want to do it? Let's go bloody do it, mate. Let's grab hold of life. 1 second later, it's like instant regret, detained by the police officer.
It also follows what I think is actually my favorite part of any of the episodes so far, and that is the throwing the monkey in the ocean story.
I
tell you what, I was cracking up.
Are we pre or post Michael and the Jeep?
Yeah, that was the previous episode.
Oh, man. So it's up there with Michael's, the many colors of Michael's life.
Yeah.
Yeah. A monkey eating your whole pack of 200 G-free cigarettes. and then throwing it in the sea.
In the sea.
Very British. It hit British a rock. Squaddy code.
It hit a rock. That's horrible.
Yeah. It also, though, feels so out of character for Alan to really care that much about this monkey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, usually he's so on board with the Michael's abilities.
I feel as though, for me, monkeys are definitely in the duplicitous animal category. Like, I find it very hard to be sympathetic to monkeys. Mm. I wouldn't be cruel to a monkey, but if someone was like, I had to throw a monkey in the sea, I'd be like, probably deserved it.
Mm. Yeah. Also, monkey could fuck you up. That's the thing. Yeah. Sometimes you could, if you killed a monkey in a situation like that, you could probably plead self-defense because people would be like, yeah, that fucker could have ripped your face off.
They're creeps. They're handsy. Yeah. In the ocean.
I guess there's a fun bit where they're talking about monkeys stealing the windscreen wipers off your car in a safari park, and then Michael's like, maybe they're trying to build a whole car out of parts and then just drive it straight out the gate.
Another like window into Michael's brain, which is fantastic.
I tell you what, you'd be laughing on the other side of your face if the monkeys did successfully do that, though. That would be really I tell you what, the staff of Woburn Safari Park would be like, no one predicted this.
Don't let the monkeys on the cart. Why? It's actually a long story involving engineering, but...
The monkeys are actually selling catalytic converters on the black market. You'd be amazed how many bananas you can get for those.
Alan wants to wear a cone on his head, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's all he wants to do. Like a witch.
Yeah.
A witch.
Yeah. Like a big witch.
Oh,
with
and then
which not normally with the high vis element of a traffic cone.
And doesn't Michael say, "Oh, I want it." You could use it as a megaphone and say, "Stop telling me what to do."
Yeah.
Do you know we call them witches' hats?
Oh, do you?
Traffic cones we call witches' hats.
That's so delightfully Australian.
That is very. That's up there. That's not quite Chaz Wazzers, but it's pretty high up of Australia being like, "Why not? Why not? Yeah. We're only on this life for a short time." Let's enjoy ourselves.
Witches' hats.
And it also feels like a very like unwieldy way to refer to them.
Mm.
Yeah. What are the people shortening that? Witchos?
That being said, we call it. We've got cat's eyes.
Yeah.
I don't even know what
we're talking about cat's eyes previously on this podcast.
I don't even know what the official name of cat's eyes are.
I think in Britain that is the official.
What they're
name.
Called? Yeah, yeah.
But also we had some messages about this on the Discord, and someone in another European country was saying that they call it the equivalent of cat's eye in German or Swedish. It was like a Germanic language.
You must have quite spooky Australian highways. You got the witches and the cats.
Well, no, we call them reflectors.
Oh, so you're only allowed
much
one
more straight down the line gets the job done.
Yeah.
I think that I think we'd call them reflectors.
Mm.
I'm trying to think of what we anything that. Yeah, I mean, cat's eyes is great. It is funny to go you guys have cat's eyes.
Name.
We'll take witches' cats. You guys keep cones. We'll call them reflectors.
Yeah, you could have gone with witches' cats. There you go. That would have been that could have been a sort of team.
Yeah, it's a very Halloween themed highways.
Yeah. Well, driving is spooky. Yeah. I mean, you have got like weird animals that come out at night and jump in front of your car. So, yeah, that does make sense. So the police agree to let Alan go on the basis that he goes straight home.
He lies about his name.
Yeah. Fake name and address.
He's
very hesitant.
King Road.
Road number 10.
Ipswich.
Yeah, I thought that was a good bit of writing in determining that 10 is the funniest thing to say because it's sort of the first number you would think of.
Yeah.
Not going for an odd number or a... Yeah. And then Lynn panics trying to pull the car away and he immediately goes back into the sort of disparaging. It's weird how he's sort of like he's fumbling when the cop is talking to him, but then as soon as he's talking to Lynn, he becomes like confident and assertive again.
Yeah. Yeah. He's never more confident than when it's just him and Lynn because that's the person who has to take all of his crap. You see, you see him lose confidence so many times this episode, like asking the guy to go for a pint with him and instantly get rejected. Failing, like getting left speechless when he's when he's talking to Susan.
Yeah,
but it never happens with Lynn. Lynn can't get him.
Yeah. And then we get a little interaction with him and Michael back at the hotel, where he's like, "I'd like some eggs in the morning. I want you to lay them, you chicken."
Chicken.
Yeah. Which is particularly funny, a man as cowardly as Alan.
It is. Yeah, he does get stumped so often when, like, you'll go in as hard as he often does with Lynn, and then just get stumped as soon as there's any sort of pushback, and then he's like, "Okay, well now I'm confused and I'm speechless." But then when he is angry, he will say everything, like when he's angry, but he calls him a chicken. When he was angry with the farm representative, the other, he just kept going him. And as he does at the end of this episode with the whoever the, what's the other radio announcer?
Oh, Dave Clifton.
Dave Clifton.
And he's happy to just go at him.
That's such an interesting way to wrap the episode up with, like, Alan doing something that he definitely doesn't normally do, which is breaking a cardinal rule of radio, and just because he's got the technicality of decide swipe away from it, he almost kind of wins. I think it's like this embarrassing thing can have happened and he's fine with that, but Dave Clifton will not be in on the joke because you're not my friend.
Yeah. So we get the scene where Dave Clifton is trying to razz him about it by saying cone, but not forgotten, cone and the barbarian, all this kind of stuff. And then Alan eventually...
Cone dancing?
Yeah. And then Alan's like, oh, fuck off. And he's like, oh, he's swearing on the radio. They have this back and forth. And he's like, well, Dave, it's technically your show. It's 7:01. I'm technically a guest and you failed to control me. Read the small print on your contract.
I am speechless. You don't sound speechless.
Yeah. I wish you were.
And then right when he's about to switch off Alan's mic, Alan just gets in over the fannies.
Yeah. Perfect. I wonder if fannies is against the Ofcom broadcasting.
I think
code.
It is in this country. There's a great PDF you can get online.
Yeah, it's certainly
which ranks,
in Australia.
Which ranks the words that you. But yeah, the weird thing about fannies is that it's more offensive here than it is in. Actually, I don't know about Australia whether fannies butt or.
No, it's a vagina.
It's vagina. Yeah. Okay, cool. So, but in America.
Vagina or Craddock. Always worth remembering.
I just do not understand how Americans ever got. But to mean fanny. Fanny and butt to be fanny just it's a woman's name.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Have you ever had because I've encountered this before, people who call a vagina a front bottom. I've seen this and I find that really alarming.
That's just for comedic purposes, surely.
If you want to say
vagina, but you're like, okay, let's say it in the least offensive way, in a way that might provoke a giggle.
I think in a way that might be one of the most offensive ways I've ever heard to a friend. Well, I've encountered it in the context of people like being like, oh, that's what my mum used to tell me it was called when I was a child. And I'm just like, but why? That would raise so many more.
Yeah, yeah.
Like your
that's
aim.
I think there's just something really unsettling about any child saying the words penis or vagina.
Yeah, I'm not saying
like,
that
right,
those
professor.
Are necessarily.
Jesus. Just put it away, all right?
Yeah, I feel like front bottom is going too far in the other direction.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. It's veering into a kind of baffling sort of carry on kind
of. Each kind of slang term for penis or vagina kind of can tell you bits about the person you're talking to.
Yeah. Just kind of like... It'd be very funny to teach a child very inappropriate, the hog. Yeah.
Oh, God. A little boy.
Yeah, hog implies a level of heft.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the worst thing about it.
That I think is inappropriate.
The lad's packing. I say that in a dispassionate way as his father, but...
Let me tell you, he didn't get it from me.
Oh, absolutely not. Gets that from his mother. Yeah. Genetically, I mean.
She doesn't have one now, but she's had plenty, if you know what I mean.
Well, the idea is that she sort of somehow acquired this trait.
Yeah, basically, if you're a woman and you bang a lot of guys with big wangs, eventually it will pass on in genetics and your son will have a big wang.
What about hog for both?
Hog for vagina. You might be ushering into the age of gender neutral, a term that we can use for penis or vagina.
Having a hog.
Woke legend over here. I love that.
High on the hog.
So not replacing penis or vagina, but replacing the term genitals.
Yeah, just with hog.
We don't have a slang term for the word genitals.
Jennies. Getting a bit of Talia this evening.
Yeah, a bit of Talia. Yeah, Talia.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that is that is an episode of
What's this podcast
Partridge.
About again?
genitalia, I believe.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. My girlfriend did go to school with a girl called Jenna Taylor.
Oh my!
How?
Well, it just occasionally you just feel as though you gotta run a name by the board of directors. You know, you've got to have a team of school bullies on retainer who can look through your baby name choice and go.
The Homer joke is Marge's the flashback episode. They're talking about names for their first son, and Homer's like, she's like, how about Marcus? She's like, no, they'll call him Mucus. How about, and she names a bunch, and goes, okay, how about Bart? He goes, okay, Bart, Cart, Dart, Eart. No, we're good, yeah.
Eart. Yeah, great stuff.
That's, well, I think Jenna Taylor's probably not, Now you say it, you can't unhear it.
Mm.
But
I mean, it's
she probably did fine for many years because like she'd have been Jenna T. She'd have just been Jenna. No one knows anyone's surname until you're at least 11 years old.
He gets read out. Would he get read out every day?
No, you just get a first name.
Yeah.
And, and if there's two in a class, you'd be like, you know, Milo A and Milo E.
One of those Fiat 500 type shortenings. Oh, my Jenny T's. They're playing up.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's our closest swing at the gender neutral slang.
Your Jenny T's.
Jenny T's.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
Less offensive than front, bottom.
Yeah, you don't want to be... The moral of this podcast, if there is any...
Did a quick test. You more offended by front and bottom or cunt?
I think just there's something just horrifying about front and bottom. It has a kind of like H.R. Geiger type, like just implies some kind of horrific mutation. Like in a way that just should... And that's why I find saying it to children so baffling. It's because, no, children are curious and they're going to want you to elaborate.
Mm.
Your job in that situation is to tell them what it's called in a way that invites no further inquiry.
And also every child knows that the bum is, you know, that's the dirty bit. Ha, 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 we've all got one. It poos, ha, ha, ha.
Mm.
We don't want to warp our children, like little girls out there being like, your front bit is disgusting.
Yeah. Exactly, front bit.
Yeah,
front bit.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, the front crumpet. That's what
front crumpet.
That's what it will be called in Britain in the future. Rajiv, is there anything you'd like to plug?
When's this going out?
In like about a week.
Okay, so I am I'm producing a sketch show with the Lovely Boys, which is going out on Radio 4 in August. Listen to that. It's going to be really, really funny. You know who the Lovely Boys are from the internet. I'm also going to be at Edinburgh for... I'm going to be at the Falmouth Fringe. So if you, I don't know how your Cornwall contingent is, but please come see my show. I'm on the Saturday at the Falmouth Fringe. And I'm also going to...
It's
going to
be a savoury first half of the show, but then the back half of the show, there's going to be a sort of sweet fruit-based treat.
That's very... That's a deep cut for...
That's for the real Cornish listeners.
Yeah.
I don't have any.
I think there's Cornish listeners being like, what the fuck's he on about?
Yeah. Always remember to hold Rajiv by the crust.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that'll do.
Yeah. Like pasties.
Pasties.
Yeah.
I don't want one.
I don't want one. They're just curious.
And I'm going to be at the Edinburgh Fringe. It's all a bit up in the air, but I'm probably going to be there for half of it doing a work in progress show at like about 11 p.m. So please come see it because it's going to be the Wild West. It's going to be a very loose thing.
I'm intrigued by Late Night Rajiv.
Honestly, so am I. But I'm doing things, and so just follow me on the internet and there's the Rajiv
Get him
guarantee.
On payphone.
If you've got questions, just ask me directly and I'll give them to you. You want to know things about my personal life? Just ask me directly and I'll let you know.
All the Zootons.
Oh yeah. The Zootons too. Any kind of music media.
Yeah. Yeah. And as ever, you can listen to Pete and Lucas' podcast, Ooh Spooky.
Yeah. You can listen to us, on Ooh Spooky, 3 hours
an
age. I'm also going to be at the Edinburgh Fringe.
H3O.
320.
Ooh.
320, baby.
What's the show? What's the show?
Don't raise it yet. That's the title of the show.
Yeah, wait an hour.
320. Mm. It's just Peter rolling a zoot for 60 minutes and staring at a clock.
It's 420. We're out.
Yeah. That way, 311 is the better time because then you can be rolling a joint for 69
Ooh,
minutes.
Ooh, now there's
yo
comedy.
Dog.
Yeah,
damn,
there you go.
Damn, that's almost perfect. I'm just doing a work in progress show as well, but it's me. Peter Jones.
At 3:20 p.m. You get the most unstoned people in there because it's 23
right
hours.
Perfect. It's the perfect show to not be stoned for, but to be stoned for right after.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's exactly. All the only guarantee.
Yeah. And then they go for a little snack.
3:20 is a great hour. What time's your show?
5:45.
Yeah, good spots.
People will be somewhat stoned by then, let me tell you.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. If they want to do the combo, they go to you first.
Yeah.
Then they go get high, go to Milo's.
Yeah.
And then sleep for, I guess, 4.5 hours. Get out of bed.
bit of meth off to the
bumper meth. Come to my show. My show guarantee. I won't kick you out if you're visibly on meth.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Bumper meth. One full listen of Zootons tired of hanging around, and then
You're gonna need to know a decent amount of Zootons to get all the cultural references in my show.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. That is crucial stuff.
Well done on knowing the album name. Not even the first album. The second album.
Yeah. There you go. That's the. That's the sort of knowledge I bring, which is less Zooton's knowledge than you. And as ever, you can check out Trash Shooter and Glue Factory. I will also be at the Edinburgh Fringe, as mentioned. And there's previews. I do dates everywhere. Just check my website. Anything I say on here will be horrendously out of date, but the website is king. If it says it on the website, I will be there or I have forgotten. But either way, take the risk. You'll be refunded if I don't turn up. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.